Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Belgian police have released a photo of a third suspect following Tuesday's triple terror bombings at the Brussels airport and a subway station that killed at least 34 and wounded more than 200 others. He is shown alongside two others who are believed to have been brothers and suicide bombers. The IS group has claimed responsibility for the carnage. There may be a link with last year's Paris bombings that killed 130. Two bombs went off at the airport. A suicide bomber blew himself up about an hour later at the Malbeek subway station near EU headquarters. Commuters Wednesday endured long lines and increased security checks before boarding trains.
I don't believe really in it. I think if they want to attack, they can attack also here in the queue. So for me, it's just to ease the people a bit, their minds.
They're just trying to protect us, I think.
Security is logic after the events of yesterday.
Authorities in Frankfurt, London, Paris, and the Netherlands have also boosted security. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will be in Brussels Friday to formally express the condolences of the U.S. for the loss of life in the attacks. Vice President Joe Biden visited the Belgian embassy in Washington Wednesday.
On behalf of the president, I can say that we are prepared to provide any and all information, capability, technology, anything we have that can be value-added to their fight.
French Prime Minister Manuel Valls has called on the European Parliament to act on authorizing a passenger name record for Europe. Senegalese voters approved a controversial constitutional referendum, voting over 60% yes to cut the presidential term from 7 to 5 years, but the referendum suffered from low voter turnout. Turnout of less than 40% of those registered. The vote also limits the age of presidential candidates to 75 and allows independents to run. This is VOA News. European Union Foreign Affairs Chief Federica Mogherini met with the head of the Syrian delegation to proximity talks in Geneva Wednesday, along with his opposition counterpart and UN envoy Stefan de Mistura. Afterwards, she spoke of the need to reach a settlement so they can focus, the focus rather, can be turned on the real threat facing Syria from Islamic State.
Extremely important. Enter into the political process without delays, without games, with the spirit of reaching a solution.
The head of the Syrian delegation, Bashar Jafri, said he believes this phase of the talks has broken a diplomatic impasse. The talks are to recess for Syrian elections. President Obama met Wednesday with Argentina's new president, Mauricio Macri, at the start of a two-day state visit, the first bilateral visit to Buenos Aires by a U.S. leader in nearly 20 years. Mr. Obama, during a joint news briefing, spoke of his counterpart as a man in a hurry, trying to improve the country's ailing economy.
I'm impressed because he has moved rapidly on so many of the reforms that he promised to create more sustainable and inclusive economic growth and to reconnect Argentina with the global economy and the world community.
President Macri, who took office in December after a decade of leftist rule, signaled he wants stronger economic ties with Washington and other free market economies. The president's visit to Argentina coincides with the 40th anniversary of a military coup supported by the U.S. Mr. Obama acknowledged U.S. relations with Latin American dictatorships in the 1970s damaged its image, but he said he hopes the release of long-classified documents about Argentina's so-called dirty war will rebuild trust. Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic will hear the verdict in his genocide trial Thursday, involving the 1995 Srebrenica massacre, Europe's worst atrocity since World War II. The verdict will be read out at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. The 70-year-old Karadzic, the highest-ranking person to face judgment before a UN tribunal, he was arrested in 2008 after eluding authorities for 11 years. The UN and rights groups called on Egypt Wednesday to stop the crackdown on rights activists and drop all impediments to their work. 14 international organizations, including Human Rights and Amnesty International, said Egyptian authorities should stop calling rights activists in for questioning, banning them from travel, and attempting to freeze their personal funds and family assets. Egypt's foreign minister said authorities support civil society and reject so-called tutelage over human rights from other countries. Police in Kenya's capital say four men burned a car from the ride-sharing company Uber Wednesday, the same day Uber launched services in Mombasa. Tensions between Kenyan taxi companies and Uber have risen over the past month. Cab drivers say Uber's ride-hailing app and lower fares hamper their ability to earn a living. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's foreign minister has been relieved of his post.
I have been relieved of my duties as the Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation for the Republic of South Sudan this evening by a presidential decree by my president, Salva Kiir Mayardit.
Bwana Merab Benjamin is now the former South Sudan foreign minister. The U.S. helped Cameroon beef up its airport security. South African President Jacob Zuma is under investigation for influence peddling. Zanzibar's president is being sworn in today after winning a second five-year term. And members of a Tanzanian parliamentary committee resign over corruption allegations.
I met some of the members and they have resigned from those standing committees, and they say these allegations are too big for us to continue being members in these committees.
Nape Nnauye is Tanzania's information minister, and we'll tell you why President Mugabe's cabinet has ordered all foreign-owned companies to close by April 1st this year. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's foreign minister has confirmed that he has been relieved of his post. As foreign minister, Barnaba Merab Benjamin says the decision was made Thursday through a decree issued by President Salva Kiir Mayardit. But he said he will continue to be a committed member of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement, the SPLM party, as well as a member of parliament. Benjamin denies he was fired because he had said that the oil-rich region of Abyei was not a part of South Sudan. He says he supports the Abyei Protocol, which says that the status of the region should be decided by the Ngok, Dinka and Meseria tribes of the region through a referendum, whether they want to be a part of South Sudan or Sudan.
I have been relieved of my duties as the Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation for the Republic of South Sudan this evening by a presidential decree by my president, Salva Kiir Mayardit, the president of the Republic of South Sudan. I greatly appreciate the confidence that he has placed in me for the last 3 years as the Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation. So I've been relieved. But I'm still a member of parliament representing my constituency in the National Assembly.
Can you tell us, Mr. Minister, why you think you were relieved of your post?
You know, politicians have the various reasons why sometimes they can be relieved of their duties. We had a problem of a report on the issue of the people of Abyei, in which it was erroneously said that indicated the Dinka Ngok of Abyei are Sudanese, and so there was a lot of complaint from our citizens of Abyei. That incident, they felt that why was that mistake done? But otherwise, I think all in all, I will continue as a politician to support my brothers and sisters from Abyei and the people of South Sudan, and I'll continue to play that role.
One of the articles I read in the Sudan Tribune is that you said that Abyei was not a part of South Sudan. And so in that way, the article suggests that you conceded Abyei to the government in Khartoum. Did you say that?
No, that is not true. Sudan Tribune will always say something opposite. Opposition, as I articulate as the foreign minister at the time, is that Abyei has joint sovereignty for the Republic of South Sudan and the Republic of Sudan. And that's why the Abyei Protocol said that there should be the right of self-determination through a referendum by the nine Ngok Dinka chiefdoms to choose whether they go back to South Sudan, where they originally were, or remain a part of the Sudan. And because that referendum would be decision by the people, by the Ngok Dinka of Abyei, it is what the Republic of South Sudan will support. And that's what I support. But I have never said in any way whatsoever that I have conceded Abyei to be a part of the Sudan.
Mr. Minister, there are more serious other issues that South Sudan has to deal with now, which is the implementation of the peace agreement that was signed last year. Do you think the issue of Abyei should come forefront at this moment?
Abyei will always be in the forefront, no doubt about that. And as you know, it is being handled by former President Mbeki through the African Union High Implementation Panel. So there's no question that the peace process will have to go ahead. The implementation process has to go ahead, and that's why we're still asking Dr. Riak really to come so that the transitional government of national unity can be formed.
And you will continue to play your role as a member of parliament and not as foreign minister or not as an official of the South Sudan government?
I will be a member of parliament in the National Assembly of the Republic of South Sudan. I'm also a member of the National Liberation Council of the political party, the ruling party, that is the SPLM. So you can rest assured I'll continue to play my role, both in parliament and in the party.
Barnaba Morab Benjamin is the now former foreign minister of South Sudan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Tensions continue to simmer on the popular tourist island of Zanzibar, where Ali Mohamed Shein will be sworn in today, Thursday, for a second five-year term as president of the semi-autonomous island of Tanzania. Shein won 91% of the vote in last Sunday's rerun election. The first poll held last October was annulled by the Electoral Commission, citing massive irregularities. The main opposition Civic United Front Party claims it won the October election and chose to boycott last weekend's elections. As Wiley Lowry reports from Zanzibar, the CUF party says it will not be represented in the new government, leaving many to wonder what will happen next.
The narrow, winding alleyways of Stone Town are slowly coming back to life. Shops are opened and tourists wander through the ancient city. For 5 months, the islands have been in political limbo. But after this week's re-election, many hope that's over. Hatib Abdullah owns a small shop on Hurumzi Street in the heart of Stone Town.
I'm happy because they're finishing these things and we can look after 5 years, I think, 2020 again, for like this way. But now we are already finished. If we are happy, if you not happy, anything happen, you are not to accept to be a normal good and to be work like before.
The Zanzibar Electoral Commission says 67% of eligible voters cast ballots, and Ali Mohamed Shein won in a landslide. But there were very few international monitors there to watch the vote, and the opposition party says the numbers are not accurate. Nazar Masri speaks for the opposition party.
The number are cooked. Even the vote are cooked. But there's no way that Dr. Shein, who got only 178,000 votes 5 months back, staying in the office illegal for 5 months and gaining 120,000 votes more without campaign, without anything. This is unbelievable.
The ruling party CCM seems determined to form a new government, and right now it doesn't look like the CUF will have a part in it. Masri says that's fine by the CUF.
We said that we're not going to support this government. We're not going to participate in anything in this government. We are going to build a party. We are going to build a political stability and political strength of our party.
Meanwhile, Masri is urging CUF supporters to remain calm and to refrain from protesting. Willie Lowry for VOA News in Zanzibar.
Some members of Tanzania's Parliamentary Committee on Social Services have resigned and petitioned the Speaker of Parliament to launch a thorough investigation into allegations that certain lawmakers solicited bribes from state-run enterprises. A majority of the accused lawmakers are members of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi CCM party of President John Magufuli. Some Tanzanians say the allegations, if proven to be true, undermine ongoing efforts by President John Magufuli to combat corruption in public institutions. But Government Information Minister Nape Nnauye tells reporter Peter Clotty that parliament members he contacted denied taking any bribes.
So yesterday, late in the evening, I met some of the members of parliament who have taken the step of resigning, writing a letter to the Speaker of the Parliament, resigning from being members of those standing committee of the Parliament. And they asked the Speaker and his people to do a thorough investigation on the allegations. I met some of the members and they have resigned from those standing committees, and they say these allegations are too big for us to continue being members in these committees. We want serious investigations.
so that this thing can be put into black and white.
When should Tanzanians expect Parliament to initiate this investigation demanded by these members of Parliament about these allegations?
We have different committees in the Parliament, and I believe Speaker and the Parliament in general, they are going to take steps on this, because at this speed of Dr. Magufuli of fighting corruption, one arm of the country cannot be allowed not to adhere to this speed. And I think the members of the Parliament will stand for this, because it is going to ruin the respect people have for the House. This one angle. But there is another angle. You know, I am the spokesperson of the ruling party, and most of the MPs who have been mentioned in this scandal, they are coming from my party. I believe if these allegations also are being proved, I think this party cannot keep quiet. We will take some actions.
Some people are saying in Tanzania that with the speed with which President Magufuli has launched a fight against corruption and put everybody on their toes, this corruption allegations against majority of members of parliament that comes from his party undermines his effort to fight corruption in public institutions. What do you say about such concerns being expressed by Tanzanians?
Of course, they are true concerns. But if no action is taken, then I will second with them. But I believe if there is serious report on those allegations, actions will be taken. Even to these allegations, they are serious allegations to the House. They are serious allegations to the members of Parliament, who are supposed to make sure they are walking in the straight line. And today they are alleged to these serious allegations like this. I believe steps are going to be taken.
Nape Nnauye is Tanzania's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 24th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. The United States has given Cameroon police sophisticated equipment to monitor airports and border crossings as part of continued cooperation in the fight against the terrorist group Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more on this story from Yaoundé.
Cameroonian police showed reporters the new surveillance set up Tuesday at the Yaoundé police headquarters. On screens in this room, officials can monitor movements at airports and border crossings. They can also see images from scanners, then peer into parcels or bags looking for suspicious content.
Les États-Unis d'Amérique vont installer dans nos aéroports.
Cameroon's police chief, Martin Bagangele, says the U.S. is installing these scanning and identification systems in Cameroon airports and at border checkpoints to allow us to trace criminals who attempt to escape or hide among the population. The police chief said for security reasons, he could not give details on the exact technology. The U.S. also gave airport officials equipment to detect explosives, something Cameroonian officials said has been a growing concern. The donation is part of broader U.S. cooperation in the fight against Nigerian-based Boko Haram militants. The U.S. has previously given military equipment to Cameroonian troops fighting the militants in the north. U.S. military advisors are also on the ground there to provide training on how to detect and defuse explosives, among other things. Cameroon was drawn into the Boko Haram conflict when the militants began attacking towns near the Nigerian border in 2013. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South African President Jacob Zuma is facing an investigation over accusations he gave undue influence to the Gupta family, owners of a multifaceted business empire. The allegations have sparked public fury and renewed calls for the president to step down. But analysts say Zuma has weathered other political blunders in the past and will probably survive this one too. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The revelation by several government ministers and party officials that they were approached by the Guptas for cabinet posts has left many South Africans calling for President Zuma's head. The Secretary General of the ruling ANC party, Gwede Mantashe, has vowed the party will leave no stone unturned in a bid to find out why the Guptas felt they could behave that way.
I came to conclude that it's an arrogance of power. You see, when you think that you have an undue influence in you as a company, you say many things about an organization, you don't respect it, and then you can say anything. I think that is the arrogance of the superlative decree.
Mantashe has not called for Zuma to step down. But this young unemployed South African, Mbongiseni Mbele, echoes the voices of thousands, some within Zuma's own party, who now want him to go.
Zuma must go because of his ill policies, because of his indecision, because of corruption. He has presided over a corrupt government. He has promoted corruption himself.
Zuma was heavily criticized for using $20 million in public funds for improvements at his private home and for his recent firing of Finance Minister Nhlanhla Nene. The firing caused a sharp fall in the rand, wiping millions of dollars off the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. However, analysts say a recent statement by ANC leaders that they have full confidence in Zuma is a sign that the president's grip on power is still tight and strong. Johannesburg-based political analyst Ralph Mateja says the ANC could in theory end Zuma's rule, but notes that Zuma rules the party as well as the country.
It appears that there is no recourse within the ANC against the president. Hence, I don't think this is the end. He's still in charge. And when people are saying that he need to be recalled, I always say to people that, are you expecting the president to recall himself?
However, Mateja says there is no doubt the group... the country...
It appears that there is no recourse within the ANC against the president. Hence, I don't think this is the end. He's still in charge. And when people are saying that he need to be recalled, I always say to people that, are you expecting the president to recall himself?
However, Mateja says there is no doubt the Gupta scandal has damaged the reputation of Zuma and the party. Professor Lesiba Tefo, political analyst at the University of South Africa, says there are two likely outcomes for the president. Either he goes or he drags the party down with him.
I'm one of those who think it is going to be difficult for him to survive this. If he does, he will go down ultimately with the ANC.
Zuma is currently in the second year of a 5-year term that ends in May 2019. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
President Robert Mugabe's cabinet has ordered all foreign-owned companies operating in Zimbabwe to close shop on April 1st if they do not comply with the country's indigenization regulations, requiring them to transfer at least 51% of their shares to black Zimbabweans. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Harare.
João told a news conference that the cabinet decision would ensure that the indigenization law was complied with, adding that this provides support measures for the empowerment of black Zimbabweans.
This is a decision that affects all sectors. Companies make their own decisions here. We're leaving this to companies to decide. They must decide that, look, are we going to abide by the law or not? And if I'm a shareholder of a company, I would now be asking my management, I would be asking my board, chairman of the board, why are we not abiding by the law?
Some economists have argued that potential investors are shunning Zimbabwe because of its scary policies, such as the Black Empowerment Regulations. However, João told Studio 7 after the news conference that the country does not require any foreign direct investment.
Foreign direct investment is not the solution to this economy. This argument that says this country is crying for foreign direct investment is not true. Yes, foreign direct investment is something that is required, but what is actually required more in this economy is efficiency, productivity, and higher production levels.
The cabinet's decision, announced by João, was criticized by former chief economist in the finance ministry, Masimba Manyanya, who said it was surprising that the government had taken such a decision at a time when the International Monetary Fund has just completed a staff-monitored program in the country. He added that most black Zimbabweans do not have the capital to venture into top businesses owing to the country's economic meltdown. He said this move would cripple Zimbabwe's ailing economy. Efforts to get a comment from the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries and the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce were fruitless. The decision to force foreign-owned companies to close shop by April 1st if they do not meet the nation's empowerment regulations also came at a time when the government also ordered all diamond firms that were operating in the Chiadzwa area in Manicaland province to cease operations, rendering thousands of workers jobless. The government said the companies were not properly registered, while some of them were refusing to join a state entity designed to take care of diamond mining activities. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. And good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. Tanzania upstaged their hosts Chad by a solitary goal in N'Djamena in a 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier on Wednesday. Sao Tome and Principe pipped visitors from Libya 2-1 in Sao Tome as Guinea-Bissau edged Kenya 1-0 in Bissau. Visitors Benin outplayed South Sudan 2-1 in Juba, while hosts Zambia and the Republic of Congo played to a 1-1 stalemate in Ndola. Staying with the Nations Cup qualifiers, Madagascar host the Central African Republic in Antananarivo today, Thursday. The Comoro Islands face visitors Botswana in Mitsumuli. Djibouti is at home to Liberia in Djibouti City, and Ghana welcome Mozambique to Accra. In Namibia, defending champions Ghana outclassed hosts Namibia 8-0 in their biannual Under-17 Four Nations tournament in Namibia's port city of Walvis Bay, some 400 kilometers west of the Namibian capital, Windhoek, on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Ghana tackle a team from Westphalia in Germany, while Namibia face South Africa. In Brazil, African Under-23 champions Nigeria play their Brazilian peers in a friendly in Espirito Santo, some 700 kilometers north of Rio de Janeiro, today, Thursday. Both teams are gearing up for the Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro in August. Elsewhere, hosts Morocco play Egypt in a second beach soccer encounter in as many days in Casablanca today, Thursday. Turning to hockey, South Africa beat Egypt 2-0 as Zimbabwe edged hosts Namibia 2-1 in the men's contest at the Africa Junior Hockey Championships in Windhoek on Wednesday. South Africa topped the log with 9 points. Egypt and Zimbabwe have 6 points each, and Namibia has 3, while Tanzania has no point. Today, Thursday, Egypt play Zimbabwe as South Africa engage Tanzania. In the women's contest, Namibia face Tanzania as South Africa encounter Zimbabwe. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, March 24th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. May I please use this medium to call on the Nigerian National Electoral Commission to quickly declare the last Saturday already collected result of the rerun election, and also give reasons why Nigerians have been witnessing inconclusive activities of the commission since the inception of the current chairman of INEC, Albert Alago, former Boduka to run speaking award in a Panuku local government area of Kwara State, Nigeria. Thank you.
Thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. That's it for this Thursday, March 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the crew, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou talks about tuberculosis. Is it making a comeback? What are the current treatments available? For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1.